All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Friday, December 14th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
Sitting in the same room from DFSR.com. DFSR.com/deals. Get you started. It's a free 7-day trial to our premium product powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal apps for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. We got you covered for NBA. Got you covered for NHL. All covered in the one subscription package plus premium chat, premium content. About as good a deal as you will find in the industry. DFSR.com/deals, and that's a special deal just for you, the podcast listener. We are here breaking down week 15 in the NFL. We did not have a cash game podcast, so we were going to roll through some of those cash game plays on this podcast as well as we catch up with a shorter main slate of games because we have two Saturday games. We're going to kind of skip over those. That's the Houston and Jets and Browns and Denver.
And really, who wants to hear about those games anyway?
And if you want to run lineups for those, we have those slates up on our and the projections all updated for those. So if you want to go check that out, you can get that in the premium offering. But we're going to focus here on the main slate with some injury considerations. Like we said, with some cash game stuff, we're going to roll through in terms of, you know, position by position, and we'll kind of look at some of the lines and where we see some of these games ending up. Arizona goes in and plays Atlanta. Atlanta's a 10-point favorite at home, 44 over under. Usually where you want to land on running backs when you see this home favorite by this much, and we just can't trust the Atlanta side of things at this point, right? Like, they, Ito Smith and Tevin Coleman just had another week where they split carries directly down the middle last week, 33 for Coleman, 32 for Jones. Both were decent on
a lot of carries. That's 65 carries they had in that game, or were those snaps?
Snaps. Yeah, 33 snaps to 32 for Smith. Sure. Sorry. You know, we're decent on the ground, but I mean, what do we want to trust in this game? And then we can talk a little Julio maybe in terms of if he's a guy we want to land on for cash games coming off another big week where he's fully off the touchdown schneid that was kind of plaguing him earlier in the season.
Yeah, I'm not super interested in this game on either side, frankly, for cash games. I do think Julio is an interesting big tournament play here. He did have that one bad week against Baltimore. But other than that, the guy has actually been really steadily putting up fantasy points in the 20s. And we know, just from many, many historical examples of this, even this season, the first game of the year, he has that 19-target game in him, especially if a game stays close in sort of a surprising way. So Julio is always going to be on my radar for big tournaments. I'm not super, super worried about the foot, at least right now. He also tried to practice Thursday, sent home for an illness, but all signs are that eventually he'll play. So, yeah, I could still see seeing him, understanding that it's not the ideal matchup with Patrick Peterson. But I still just think it doesn't matter that much, frankly, for big tournaments. Like, you know, it's almost like a more efficient market in some ways, and the people know. People all share sort of the same information, right? Oh, this is a bad matchup, that is. But driving down ownership percentage just matters a lot for big tournaments where it matters less for cash games. So, yeah, I'm fine with Julio here.
Yeah, and like I think you're right about the Peterson thing will be in people's minds, and it's for sure a thing. Like, he gets a big downgrade in our system for it,
right.
And that downgrade will apply across the industry, and everyone will know it. And Julio is just one of these guys that can just still produce about as big a wide receiver game as there is in the NFL, and we've seen time and again, you know, some people outkick some of that coverage, so to speak, part of the pun, in terms of getting there on value. Wouldn't want to do it for cash games, and we'll be a little bit worried about the blowout. And this, I don't know, from the Arizona side, it's hard to get too interested in what they've been doing. They try to use David Johnson enough. It's just they're not a team that does enough on offense. Like, you know, they're coming off a week. Johnson touched the ball 25 times last week. He had 15 carries for 49 yards, 10 targets. You love this line. 8 receptions, 12 yards. So that's the old, I mean, I feel like that's what I would do.
Starling.
Like, that's what I would do, is like, I would just run to the line, hope that I would catch the ball, and just get instantly
It would hurt your hands if those guys threw you the ball, though. So.
I feel like they'd be so close to me that they would know not to throw it as hard as they, Josh Rosen.
Dude, we're so close to each other. Josh, why are you throwing so hard?
Rosen, man, come on, man, slow down. I have small hands, too. All right, let's keep rolling through some of these games. Again, last thing on David Johnson. There are a few guys that get this kind of volume, right? And if you are just going to touch the ball 25 times for your team there, and you have a talent of David Johnson, there are going to be games where you kind of just destroy your price because you break a couple tackles and you do get into the end zone, and understanding that the Arizona defense is about as bad as it gets. So,
yeah, granted, he doesn't have any touchdowns in the last 5 games, more fumbles than touchdowns.
Well, they have trouble getting close enough to the actual end zone. That's always going to be a problem on bad teams. I'm very interested in this game. It's definitely interested in your thoughts on the Miami and Minnesota game. So Minnesota is 7.5-point home favorites.
Yep.
Again, this is where we land, this is where we begin to want to land on starting running backs for a team. Dalvin Cook is coming off a week where he destroyed the snap count over Latavius Murray. Let me just, I had it in front of me, and I'm going to look it up real quick. Yeah, so last week, Dalvin Cook outsnapped Latavius Murray 49-8. Touched the ball 13 times on the ground and had 7 targets through the air. Price, he had 55 yards on the ground, had a receiving, 28 receiving yards, and had a receiving touchdown. His price, he's coming pretty cheap. Like, FanDuel, for our purposes, is really almost completely locked into him at 6,200. Would you feel comfortable with him? We've seen the carries kind of come and go on him, and we've seen him split time with him and Murray a little bit more than you'd like to, and we're just coming off a week where he was just the man. And by the way, early in the season when we thought he was going to be the man, before kind of the injuries cropped up, this is a guy we really wanted to run out there for sure in cash games. What are your thoughts on Cook going in here? Is he a cash game play on this slate?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd like to. So I'm going to start by saying simple yes. I think Cook is definitely a cash game play. And this is one of those scenarios where just looking at previous weeks doesn't always tell you the whole tale, because in the last 2 weeks, I think the Vikings running game sees less opportunity just on the back of weird game scripts where they were not going to be running the ball very much, right? Like, if you're down by 2 touchdowns, it's just hard to just hand the ball to your running back, keep the clock running, and probably get, you know, burn off 4 yards or whatever. If you go back to the last game that they won against Green Bay, they carried the ball, let's see, they gave the ball to running backs 22 total times, but at that point, Murray was actually getting more carries than Cook. The fact that Cook is out-snapping Murray, the fact that Murray got just 3 carries for 4 yards last game, leads me to believe that they're going back to the preseason plan, which appeared to be to make Cook the future running back. So, yeah, I think you actually are really reassured by, yeah, granted it was only 18 total touches, and, you know, with 7 of those being targets that turned only into 5 receptions, but granted it was only 18 touches, but the fact that they did that in a 14-point loss leads me to believe that if this game follows the game script that Vegas has put forth, you could see mid-20s touches for Cook without too much difficulty.
Bottom third defense for Dolphins this season. Yeah. Slightly better against the run, but it's negligible, so I don't think you're worried about that. And what you like to see when we get this late in the season is a team that needs to win. Minnesota is 6-6-1. That is still in the playoff hunt in the East. In the NFC. So we do want to hone in teams with something to play for. So sometimes teams are playing for just like getting their guys, you know, getting their guys' stats, or just doing kind of, or seeing what they have in other guys. But Minnesota's a team that needs to win, so I think I'm on that. Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, really the former more than the latter, are guys that we've wanted to really heavily target in kind of in cash games earlier in the season when the target share was through the roof. That hasn't really been the case in the short term. Thielen's coming off only a 7 target game for 70 yards. Diggs went 4-for-6 for 76 yards. I still have him like close to double-digit target expectation. I'm not sure if that's really where we want to land, because Thielen's price has come down, and he's kind of his name is kind of popping its head up in some lineups here. Where do you stand on the passing game for the Vikings?
I'd rather not, frankly. I think Thielen, you know, was a great story in the beginning of the season. 3 of his last 6 weeks, just 7 targets in those weeks. If you know that that's just going to happen from time to time for him, it's really hard to pay, and that's half the games, it's really hard to pay the full 8,200. And oddly, in some of these other games, he hasn't even been that efficient. Like the New England game, he did get the 10 targets, but he caught just 5 of them for 28 yards. So I don't know if this is other teams, you know, kind of just figuring out the Vikings and their approach and kind of taking away those slot passes a little more often. I mean, Thielen was never like a classic, I'm going to beat you even if you know I'm going to beat you sort of wide receiver. He wasn't Randy Moss. It was sort of a gimmicky thing in the first place, and the fact that teams have a blueprint for it now makes me a little bit more bearish than I had been. I think both these guys, Thielen and Diggs, are interesting big tournament upside plays, because we've seen in the not too distant past that they can be double-digit targets. You know, they can put up 100-plus receiving yards, multiple touchdowns. The upside is still there, but for cash, I think we can do better.
Yeah, Miami is worse against the pass. You are getting pretty low-rated cornerbacks in this situation, specifically out of the slot, and that's where Thielen is going to run a majority of his routes, runs almost 60% of his routes from the slot, and that's where Miami has had the most difficult time covering that part of the field. Yeah. So if there's going to be a place to target, it does seem like it's going to be here. So if we saw a return to double-digit targets because they were looking to exploit something, I wouldn't be shocked, and at this point, I don't think you can bank on it in the way that we could bank on it earlier in the season, or the way you can kind of look to some of these other guys. On the Miami side, you know, they're coming off the crazy win last week against the Patriots. Obviously, we have seen them, you know, Kenny Stills get some targets from time to time. They're pretty big underdogs with a low total. Anything you like on Miami?
No, not especially. I mean, I think the wide receiver game is going to be interesting from a tournament perspective, just because if you happen to guess right, you could wind up feeling pretty happy about it. If you happen to guess Kenny Stills last week against New England, congratulations. You probably had yourself in GPP discussions, at least on the basis of that selection. But there's no saying to me that, you know, right now Amendola and Parker, their statuses are still in doubt. And if either of these guys plays, they could be the guys who get the chief, you know, target share over the course of the week. I just don't know that this is where you want to be making your firm guesses, because I don't think that Miami has demonstrated, hey, when everyone's healthy, this is our guy.
Yeah, and like Tannehill, you know, averages some like 26 attempts a game. Like, they play super slow with him. He does not throw the ball very well downfield.
Yeah, you could just lose it on sheer volume.
Exactly. Sure. Like, there are volume concerns here. Minnesota is a good defense. Tampa Bay goes in and plays Baltimore. Baltimore, 7.5-point home favorites. And I'm stressing the home favorite thing here, because it is something of a theme this week as we get later in the season. And that is where we want to target ground game. And when we want to target ground game with Baltimore, you're almost just targeting the quarterback at this point. He is the ground game. They have Gus Edwards there as well. But Lamar Jackson is just, he's the running back. He's the running back who, you know, at times in the run pass, well, really the run option is mostly what they're running. But in that kind of option format that they're running with him, he's the guy that is getting majority of the touches. He ran the ball 14 times last week, threw the ball 24 times. This is the best defense, one of the best defenses you can face against in terms of DFS or just football in general. Where do we land on Jackson right now, coming in 100% of our lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings at his price point?
Yeah, I mean, the Jackson thing is a little bit weird because people have been playing quarterbacks against Tampa Bay all season, and by and large, it's worked. Jackson just isn't exactly a quarterback in the way that most people picture, though. He's actually a pretty ineffective passer, and if you look at the schedule he's had since becoming a starter, this is something I was looking up in writing the cash game article this week. He played Cincinnati, terrible pass defense. Oakland, worst pass defense. Atlanta, bottom five pass defense. And in those games, he never managed more than 178 passing yards.
I think KC is close to bottom one, too.
KC's like middle of the pack. I looked at
that. No, KC's dead last against the pass this season. Oh, no, 32. Run. I'm looking wrong. Sorry. Yeah, 26 overall. My bad. Good.
There you go.
Yes.
I'm going to proceed now. but. Yeah, so it's this weird thing where he's had these excellent matchups, really hasn't done anything with them through the air. So if we're looking at the baseline for Jackson, I feel like you almost need a matchup on this level in order to be considering him at an escalating price point, because he hasn't exactly killed these prices. That being said, if I told you there was a running back who was going to average 17 carries for 71 yards and about a touchdown every other game, you'd be pretty interested in this price point anyway. And if I told you he was going to stack on effectively a high floor 6-10 fantasy points, which is what Jackson can get out of the passing game, I think you'd be even more interested. So I think that if you basically take him as like Christian McCaffrey or something like that, I think that's a reasonable comp. And for his price point, I think he's going to bring an excellent floor, because it's going to be awfully tough for him to, short of getting sat, which I think is in play for a guy who's going to really struggle to pass the ball from time to time, short of getting sat, it's going to be hard for him to not get there to like 17, 18, 19 fantasy points.
Yeah, it's worth noting here. So two things. One, Flacco is back and healthy now. Has been moved just as into the backup role. So that is going to loom there and sit there as a, if you are struggling.
Yeah, you're telling me if they fall behind 13 points in a game, Jackson has two interceptions on 5 of 14 passing, like he's getting pulled out of the game.
Yep, and you make a great point about the just unbelievable run that he's had against teams. His first five games as a starter against the five of the seven worst defenses in the league. So you
just
really
saying,
can't
man.
You can't run any better in terms of this. Yep, I think that's enough to be concerned, and we're going to have to probably manage this, and we'll be on a live stream going into on Twitch going into lineup lock, where we'll be discussing this very thing about where we want to land on Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, one other thing about Jackson too, when you use baseline stats, you really have to be careful about strength of schedule stuff too, because over the course of a whole season, strength of schedule tends to not matter quite as much. Over a five game stretch, if you just happen to roll the dice and hit the jackpot of like all the worst defenses, you really can get in a position where a guy's stats are inflated. So yeah, a little concern for sure.
Yep, they're going to need to jump out to a lead here. This will be one of the key cogs of things, pieces of just information that we're looking at. We're going to just need to make the decision. No one's going to make our projections are going to have to determine where we land with this. Tampa Bay side, DeSean Jackson looks like he's just been ruled out already. Chris Godwin's been a guy. He got targeted 10 times, caught one ball on 10 targets. He's a guy that's still on the target share, is still coming in as something of a value, especially on DraftKings at 4,900. I think he's close on FanDuel as well. And the conversion is at 5,400 on FanDuel because the price doesn't move because he's just stunk so bad. 9 of those balls were uncatchable, according to different stats that I've read. Where can you land on a guy like Godwin here? Still coming cheap for a guy that has seen double-digit targets.
Yeah, it's strange on Godwin. A 1 out of 10 week is something I would not have forecast as a potential outcome for him. He had reeled in 19 of his prior 20 targets. So the 1 out of 10 sure just seems like just a crazy outlier. I don't really know how else to say it. Part of that could be other teams realizing that they're actually going to pass him the ball and maybe taking him a little bit more seriously. But I suspect that we'll see him come back to being a pretty efficient member of the Tampa Bay passing game. 5,400 is an extremely cheap price. I think the real question will be, how many times do you need to pay down at wide receiver this week? Right now, our system, especially on FanDuel, where Amari Cooper is basically going to top 80% cash game ownership, I would guess, at a $6,600 price tag. How many times do you really need to go into the basement? I mean, if you're going to pay Dalvin Cook $6,200, Amari Cooper $6,600, do you need more than one punt wide receiver? Because I think there's some other, and if you play Jalen Samuels again too, for instance, because I think there's some other interesting cheap wide receiver options too. But yeah, I think if Godwin wound up in my lineups, I would grin and bear it.
Okay, moving into the next game, and I lost where I was going here. Oh yeah, sorry. Oakland goes in and plays Cincinnati. Cincinnati three-point home favorites against the Raiders, and that's like, again, look yourself in the mirror time, Raiders, because this is Jeff Driscoll. This is no AJ Green. This is a Cincinnati team that's been, they've been a little feisty at times for here and there, but this is the team that's playing with essentially its B team at this point.
Oakland has a minus 144 point differential over 13 games.
Oh, they're horrible. That's what I mean.
Beat my Steelers though.
And they're coming. They're underdogs to a team that has lost its last 5 straight against. I mean, I guess stiffer competition: New Orleans, Baltimore, Cleveland, Denver.
It's tough to be
Chargers.
Less stiff than the Raiders, right?
Okay, so this is crazy. The Raiders are so garbage. Okay, let's talk about Cincinnati here, because they are favorites here, expected to put up some points, and we are coming off a week where they just gave Mixon the ball every single time. Okay. Mixon, 26 carries, 5 receptions. This is a guy that we've wanted to touch on about being like sort of like an elite usage kind of guy. Yep. Injury concerns have been a problem with him this year, except the games he's played, he's basically seen this kind of usage. Sorry, he had 6 targets in the passing. So 32 total touches on the week last
week. It's a wonder he's had trouble staying healthy.
Yeah. Well, on the season, though, so where do we land with him on cash games? He's a guy that our system kind of wants to jam in on this slate. So right now on the season, Mixon sits 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7th overall in running back touches per game on games that he's played. He started 11 games this season. He's behind only Elliott, Gurley, Connor, who's hurt, obviously. We'll talk about him in a little bit. David Johnson, McCaffrey.
And this includes games where he was basically splitting time with Gio Bernard, which really isn't the plan right now either.
Exactly. So where do we land with him? Because can we reasonably give him like 22 to 23 touches in this game? I'm talking carries plus receptions. Because if that's the case against this Raiders defense, he's almost like a cash game lock at 7,800. Not exactly cheap, but
I think he's a great play.
Yep. Okay.
If you're asking me, I think you don't need to make too much of a case for me. I think this is a classic example where the recent game log doesn't tell the whole story. Once again, Cincinnati's so bad that it's just really hard for them to give their running back a lot of carries. And the fact that it's like Cleveland is this way too. The fact that they've managed to do it anyway shows me that they're just not confident in any of the other plan. And so if they take a 7-point lead against Oakland in the first quarter, they're not just going to pound it to Mixon until it stops working. I have a hard time buying it. So yeah, I'm a big believer in Mixon this week. Definitely a cash game play for me.
Running backs that are more expensive than him on DraftKings. David Johnson, that's the best guy,
pass.
By the way. Aaron Jones,
pass.
Against the Bears. Tarik Cohen. It's like, these guys are more expensive. Mixon is the ninth most expensive running back on DraftKings. That is a joke of a price. He's a cash game lock on DraftKings for us. I don't see why you would go away from him. Perfect matchup. I suspect you see him as a pretty heavy chalk on a shorter slate. What about the pass game here? No AJ Green still. Tyler Boyd, that really hasn't translated as a 1-to-1 uptick in Boyd, because Boyd just is running essentially the same routes with less protection on the outside from Green. That's kind of how I'm evaluating the situation on the Cincinnati side. I don't know if you see something different though.
No, not really. I think you can just speculate on some upside basically in the passing game for Cincinnati, but just know that you're entering into full-scale speculation.
Cincinnati also bad on defense here. You know, that's why this spread is thin against a team that's really, really bad. It's also like, look yourself in the mirror time for them as well. If they're only 3-point favorites, which is basically saying Vegas is just trying to pick it out. Doug Martin, 16 carries for 32 yards last week. He stinks, but he does get a lot of touches. Then we have the passing game, which has been a mess all season. Though Jared Cook has shown pretty steady target target upside here with Jordy Nelson as well. What do you, can you talk yourself into stuff on this Oakland side? All these, a lot of these guys are still coming very cheap.
Yeah, I think Jordy Nelson is actually a receiver that I could really see being a cash game option this week. I mean, Nelson in the last 2 weeks has been targeted 18 times, caught 16 of those for just under 150 passing yards. No touchdowns. Touchdowns are going to be scarce on a team like the Raiders, but it seems as though Derek Carr has found someone that he can get a little bit of synergy with. Nelson can spread it out all over the field. When he's in the slot, he will go up against Darquez Dennard, who's been one of the very worst cover corners out of the slot this season. So I think Nelson, just 5,000 for a guy with 18 targets and 16 catches in the last 2 weeks. Nothing has really changed for Oakland. You would suspect that sometimes I think they just want to be able to move the chains in a somewhat reliable fashion. Nelson scratches that itch for me. So I think between him and Godwin, I might want to lean Nelson. You get a little savings there too. Do you have a gut between those two in the cheap possession receiver camp?
I mean, it'd be a situation I wouldn't want to go 100% all in on either, I don't think. I think sometimes I can splitting some of these guys in terms of just the overall target share. I mean, overall, like, just exposure to in lineups is not the worst thing in the world, because right. It's just hard, tough to make a conviction call on either one of them. They both have disappearing acts in their game logs as well. So that's my only concern. Real quick, Jared Cook. Well, you know, I'll go to when we get to this next game, because I want to ask you some, like, this guy or that guy sort of stats, because Jared Cook is falling into a tight end group that I think we're going to need to, like, wade through, and I think people are going to be asking themselves where they're going to land on some of these tight ends, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Tennessee goes in and plays the Giants. Giants coming off just the trouncing of the Redskins last week, even without Odell Beckham Jr., who I believe is on track to play this week.
News has been pretty mixed on Beckham. He missed Thursday's practice, and he basically, when somebody asked him afterwards, he said he wouldn't know until Sunday gets there, but he said he's feeling better, so it's just a game time decision basically.
Okay, so let's start with him as if he's not going to play.
Okay.
Last week we wanted to bump up Sterling Shepard. I'm not sure if in the end, in thinking about that, if that was just the completely correct way to go, because Shepard, while he's going to see increased target share, some of his target, it's like the Tyler Boyd thing. Like, his protection in the lineup, or excuse me, not the lineup, it's not like it's basketball. His protection in, especially like the passing routes, comes from having another guy like Beckham there. Like, there's just more to concentrate when Beckham's on the field, which is going to open up things for Shepard. So I'm not sure, I'm thinking, in thinking about it, going a little overboard on Shepard's targets might not have been the play. And I'm a little concerned about doing that again. And then Barkley is another guy that we wanted to target, saying, you know, this guy is so dynamic and is so involved in the passing game, is game script independent. He was a guy we were essentially wanting to just basically jam into lineups last week. Also, where do we land if on the Giants again if Beckham were to sit?
Yeah, it's kind of tough to say because, you know, someone like Saquon Barkley, he touched the ball, you know, only 18 times, but basically the Giants sat everybody.
That was one half, yeah, like exactly. A half plus of football.
So
it wasn't, yeah.
If you think that the Giants' plan is to basically just lean on Barkley when it's working, when it always just seems to be working with Barkley, he's just really one of those singular talent type guys who can just get it done regardless of what else is going on in the offense. I mean, especially if you think about how little teams have had to respect the Giants passing game this season and how successful Barkley's been anyway, it's just pretty much a sight to behold. So I'm still pretty high on Barkley in terms of, you know, in an absolute sense, in terms of raw fantasy points. But the big question is, can you pay $9,400 for a running back on this slate, given that, you know, you probably have to play Zeke, and there's a few other areas where, you know, the money starts getting a little bit tighter. You have some reasonably cheap flex and running back options. I don't know. I don't know that I would want to run Shepard back out there. Really concerned about the target share for him, even in a pretty weird game script. Still think there's incredible big tournament upside there, but, you know, it wasn't very reassuring, I guess, is my main thought there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I land. It helps from the decision-making process that Barkley is just is so expensive now that it might just end up becoming a price thing, where he's 9,400. That's 600 more than Zeke. I don't think there's any way you'd want to play Barkley over Zeke at this point in terms of cash games. So I don't think you're making that decision. It's really a question of whether you want to play them together in lineups, and I'm just not sure that's really where I want to be. And we'll wait on the Beckham news. Right. On the other side of the ball, the Tennessee side of the ball, we just saw, you know.
Yeah, well, you have to think about Derrick Henry in every format.
I know he's coming off this huge game, and I get it, like the 99 yard run, but is 1 week enough? A 1 week of just historical level of production that we saw last week in that game, is that enough to like change your tune on a guy who is essentially splitting carries, had been mostly ineffective this season, like he just hadn't been a very good running back? 17 carries, 238 yards, 4 touchdowns. Where do you want to land on the guys like him and Deion Lewis? The Giants still are not a very good team, but the defense isn't very good. There's potentially value here. I'm wondering, do you think people will go overboard on Henry because of that performance?
Yeah, probably. I mean, Deion Lewis, for how ineffective he was, he still touched the ball 15 times last game. And if you look at Henry and you see the 17 carries, you know, in a vacuum, you might think, hey, that's a reasonable number of touches, especially given how good he was. But the fact that he touched the ball 17 times but had no targets and Deion Lewis had those 5 targets tells you just on face value that they're just doing a first and second down and a third down back sort of situation. And the fact that Lewis still managed 10 carries as well is just not a very welcome sign. So you like the price point. Obviously, the upside is going to be significant. The matchup with the Giants is pretty solid, but I think you don't want to get ahead of yourself here because there's easily a week where, like, say the Giants get up in this game, Tennessee's not going to be able to give their running backs 32 touches in a game. So I think you could see that number dip down, you know, and all of a sudden splitting 32 carries is all well and good, or 32 touches. Splitting like 21 is pretty bad. So it's not a matchup or a situation I'm very excited about.
The team they beat last week was the Jags, who looked once again horrible, but I'm wondering your opinion about Jacksonville going into this week. So Jacksonville comes to this week, very low total, 36 over-under against Washington, yep. But 7.5-point favorites over a Washington team that just got completely run over.
No members of their offense.
Okay, so where do we land on a guy like Fournette? Because Jags still are fine playing him and giving him the ball a lot. Like, he didn't see that many touches last game because they were just losing 30-9, and Tennessee controlled the ball so much on the ground with Henry that they were just the time of possession just ended up getting them. But now they're home favorites with Fournette, a guy that they've shown the willingness to just say, you know, devil may care attitude about how many times he's going to touch the ball in a game. If we get, can we reasonably give him like 22 to 23 touches in this game? And if so, does he end up actually creeping into the cash game discussion, or has just the performance just not been there for him? Because, again, check the box of home favorite, guy who gets a lot of touches, and it's Fournette, and I'm just like, I just don't know where he lands in the group of other cash game running backs we've talked about so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd rather not for cash game purposes, just because the signs, the tea leaves that you're reading, I agree with, actually. I think him being a favorite here, Jacksonville's cavalier use of him in the past, all of that is a mark in the pro column for Fournette for sure. And he just might not get them too. You know, like, Jacksonville is still a pretty bad team with a pretty bad offense in their own right. And we've seen, I mean, look at that Colts game is a pretty reasonable example of this, right? That should have been a game, like, if there was going to be a game where the Jacksonville running game should have been able to do work, it ought to have been in that game. And it's just been an uphill battle for them. I also think Fournette's injury concerns over the course of the season, sure, he's had some games where he's had pretty significant usage. I don't think it would surprise anyone to see him have to miss a series or two there, and you're still paying relatively premium prices here. So, you know, and obviously this isn't probably the decision you're going to make, but Ezekiel Elliott's 600 more than Fournette. Like, you have to...
No, none of these guys are in discussion about whether they're better than Zeke for me. It's,
but
at this point,
no,
I'm just talking about,
saying,
who,
like,
do I want to play
guys
with Zeke, yeah.
But is Fournette fundamentally different than Dalvin Cook this week in your mind? Because in my mind, he's not really, right. And he's $2,000. So, not that, again, he's probably got more upside in terms of absolute points, but you're paying for it, man. You're paying a lot for, like, it's DFS will play with your mind this way in a way that season long won't, where it's like, you can be right about all the things you say, but price can still make a guy a not so good play. And I think that's where I land with Fournette right now.
I'm just confirming something. Yeah, so Josh Johnson is going to get the start here for the Redskins. He came in the second half over Mark Sanchez. Dynamically better than Sanchez was. It's unclear if we can take much from that. That was against, like, the Giants' second team. The game was over. The fans had already filed out of the stadium. He was playing it was essentially a preseason game that he was playing more than an actual NFL game. Now going against a Jaguars team that has been, you know, hot and cold on defense this season. Right. Unclear about how much their offense is affecting their defense, but Josh Johnson as a cheap play, knowing that you're just, you know, the guy can run a little bit. He didn't look incompetent last week. Where do you land on a guy like him?
Sure. Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. Again, not where I'm going to land trying to play a team's, you know, fourth string quarterback or whatever. I think, yeah, he looked good against all the Giants backups. So there's that. But, you know, we've been down this road before. And I think the price spread on FanDuel in particular winds up being tight enough to where you just don't want to be, again, you're deciding between Johnson 6,500 and even like Jameis Winston at 7,000. You're just not gonna do that.
Yep, I agree with you. And if it was a slightly different just defensive matchup, I think maybe we could talk ourselves into maybe some of the run stuff. But this against Jacksonville, where you might just get ground out in terms of clock, I'm not sure how much overall upside we're really getting from that matchup. All right, let's move into the... I think we're done with the 1 o'clock games.
Green Bay, Chicago.
Oh, sorry, no, I skipped over a couple here. Yeah, Green Bay, Chicago. Chicago, 6-point home favorites against Green Bay. The defense, obviously, on the Chicago side has been unbelievable this season. Their offense has been able to maintain. I'm saying that because the defense is so good and the offense is just good enough that they become a well-above-average team in the aggregate. 6-point home favorites against a Green Bay team that is now on their second week with a new coach. Any thoughts from a DFS perspective on this game? Not a bad total here at 45. Bunch of points coming in on the Chicago side.
Yeah, the total is not terrible. But so I'll start with Green Bay because they tend to be the more fantasy-relevant team on a week-to-week basis. Going against Chicago and their 6.4 yards per attempt through the air allowed this season basically has you ruling out the whole team for cash game purposes. So I think you can kind of cross them off rather quickly. I will put Davante Adams in that group with Julio Jones of the expensive receiver who's probably too expensive for cash, but an interesting pivot if you want to look at him for big tournaments. 3 weeks in a row now with a touchdown, 11 and 13 targets in his last 2 weeks. I think he's the type of guy who has that absolutely going off game inside him. His red zone usage has been solid this season, which has kind of been an issue for him in the past sometimes. 12 receiving TDs. I think I'm interested in Adams for big tournaments, especially given that I think this is not a direction most people are going
to
look.
Yeah, and then the Chicago side, it's hard to trust the running game here. Jordan Howard will touch the ball in games where they're winning, doesn't do anything in the passing game, is largely ineffective. The passing game is there just so they can run the ball more. I mean, they do sort of just enough with the Trubisky side of it to get first downs and then continue to try to run with between Cohen and Howard. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on this game from a fantasy perspective. I actually don't mind the Chicago defense, even though you do have to pay a little of a premium just on what they've been able to do this season. I skipped a couple of these 1 o'clock games because the other one that's going to have about as much
fantasy
relevance. Yeah, this is it. Is Dallas and Indianapolis. The Colts are 3-point home favorites against the Dallas team coming off a big win over Philly last week. Their offense is now concentrated solely on basically three guys, and that's Dak, Zeke, and Amari Cooper.
Play them all. Give me all of them for cash games. That's what I wrote up in the cash game article this week. I'll take them all. Dak is my favorite quarterback. I feel like people have really... I don't know. I feel like somehow he's just become underrated in terms of his fantasy production over the course of this season. He's 7,300, which is a very affordable price. Granted, you can't count on him for 455 passing yards like he had against Philly, but he had a pretty long stretch there where the floor was very reasonable. And the fact that he's still chipping in pretty solid production on the ground, I think this season he's on pace for his highest ever completion percentage, so 68% completion rate. More rushing yards per game than he ever has in the past, and more rushing touchdowns than he ever has in the past. And the touchdown to interception ratio is also, it's not the best it's been, but it's very solid compared to last year's kind of dip back down in the other direction. Dak is just actively good, and he's just not priced like he is. And so I love Dak. It's a fine matchup with Indy, just not worried about it. He's found Amari Cooper. Yeah, I'm all in on Dak for cash this week.
Yeah, Dak right now is coming in on DraftKings as something like the 12th or 13th most expensive quarterback. And
yeah,
he's
comical. I think I wrote that up in the article too. Like, read the names around Dak. They were totally laughing.
On FanDuel, it's Josh Allen, Mariota. So I guess, ridiculous. You know, right now he's 400 less than Lamar Jackson. So I guess I'm hearing you say, because we talked about Lamar Jackson.
I want to
play
Dak over Jackson 100%.
Interesting, because we have Jackson for significantly more points, and that's mostly because the matchup is really pushing things in Jackson's favor here. But this could be, you know, when we talk about making projections and talking what we'll talk about on our Twitch stream on Sunday, is this could be conviction time on a guy like Dak. Like, do we think that, like, for instance, have we not accounted for enough for Dak that the Cooper is there now? That actually makes a difference that I'm wondering.
There's a few different things, right? So I talked about the strength of schedule questions I have about Lamar Jackson. I think with a player who's a total unknown that comes out of nowhere and produces, it's extremely difficult to establish a statistical baseline for someone like that. And strength of schedule, you know, Dak has played 10 times more games than Lamar Jackson has in the NFL. It's like 8 times more games, so we just have a much more reliable baseline for him. I'd be concerned that for Jackson, like, we have him projected for 22 fantasy points right now. This is before we really go into the lab and really tinker and make sure everything is correct. That just seems high to me, given that with 4 other starts with equally good matchups, he's only hit that number one time. And that was, he hit it exactly. So you're basically penciling him in for the best game of his career. And I always hate to be that guy who's penciling someone in for the best game of their career.
Yeah, I think you're going to see Dak as a pretty popular cash game play coming off the back of last week. It's a good matchup. It rates to stay close, what you like to see. I mean, and I think that so funny, I said this on our recap podcast, but this is exactly what my brother-in-law texted me last week about. This was his cash game strategy last week, was to grab all these Dallas guys. He was a week early on that, and that is going to probably be, I would say, ends up becoming a very popular play based on what happened last week, and it's all warranted, by the way. So it's not like, I don't think you're taking recency bias and translating onto this week. I think it's,
well, none of these guys are even that expensive. Right. That the weird thing about it is we're coming off the week that showed the world that you could play all the Cowboys. Cooper is cheaper than he was last week. He was 6,800. Now he's 66.
Yeah, helps that game was the 4 o'clock late game, and I think at that point pricing is all pretty much already set because they're pushing.
Bad job by them, by the way. What's the rush? Like, just wait 2 hours.
Got to fill those contests, baby. All right, on the Colts side, the injury news we're waiting on here is T.Y. Hilton. Hilton right now is not
huge.
Has not practiced this week, and we're gonna have to kind of wait on where we land on them. Now Dallas has been a pretty good defense this season, but Hilton's still coming cheap. It's basically, and I wrote up Eric Ebron as a nut, just the tight end play. I don't know, like, there was a great stat the other day. It was like about guys who had had 3,000 more yards or 20 touchdowns or something like that before their age 25 season. And it was like Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, Rob Gronkowski, and Eric Ebron. Like the list of tight end, like the production that he's put up in a very short time. And by the way, short time in the NFL, and with teams like the Vikings that he was splitting tight end snaps with, teams like Jack Doyle he's splitting tight end snaps with, this guy, when he plays, is just an absolute beast. Do we see him as close to a cash game lock? We're going to talk about Kittle here in a little bit. And we talked about, you know, Jared Cook, and we're going to talk about Gronk too. But where does Ebron land on that group for you? And where would Ebron's target share go for you if T.Y. was out here?
Yeah, that's, I mean, all good questions. I think I want to play Ebron regardless. I can't remember if this was on the basketball podcast or the football podcast today. We talked about, you know, trying to evaluate a guy as a play with an unknown situation for his, in terms of his opportunity. And Ebron is really the classic example of this, where it's like he's a good play anyway, and if T.Y. Hilton's questionable, or like he might be a little bit banged up or might be used as a decoy, Ebron only becomes a better play. And I would use the T.Y. news as more of a, you know, just a cherry on top for an already good play. So if I was deciding between Ebron and Kittle, I mean, Ebron's target share is flat out better. Kittle was insane last week, but again, they threw him the ball zero times in spite of having 210 yards through the air in the first half. I think Ebron's opportunity is more stable. I think he's a stronger red zone target. I think he's just an actively really good receiver for a team lacking them. So, yeah, I'm all in on Ebron for cash.
We're going to have to take a look at what's going to happen with the T.Y. thing in terms of the wide receivers. The two games, we have something of a comp from earlier in the season because Hilton did miss two games. And in those two games, Chester Rogers did top double-digit targets in both of them. They have Andrew Luck has been completely fine just spreading the ball to multiple receivers. I mean, these games without Hilton, like there's like 11 pass catchers in the group. So it's one of these things where you really can't bank on it. And I will say that Chester Rogers during those games did not have great conversion percentages. But he was, after Ebron, was the second most targeted guy on the team. So I think I would feel pretty comfortable, at least on Rogers, bumping up some of that target share. We do see, you know, Zach Pascal is still there. He outsnapped Rodgers last week. Naheem Hines has caught a lot of balls out of the backfield at times. This is another one where if T.Y. Hilton was ruled out, by the way, I think if T.Y. Hilton's a full go, he's also a good play. So like,
yeah, I like Hilton
too. We're in a situation now where I think we're going to be in an either or situation in terms of what we get on Hilton. If he's out, we're going to get value in the rest of the wide receiver core. If he plays, I think, and we feel like he's fully healthy, then I think I'd be fine running him out there in cash games as well. That's another one to tune back into early as we get closer to lineup lock. A game that we don't probably need to tune a ton into is Detroit and Buffalo. Buffalo 2-point home favorites, 40 over under.
You're playing the Buffalo defense on DraftKings. That's why you got to tune into this one. 2,800. They're giving these guys away.
Yeah, they've actually been a pretty good defense this year, all things considered. It's with Josh Allen running the ball so much, they've been able to keep their opposing team at times off the field. Detroit's garbage. There's no other way.
Yeah, I think they have like the second lowest implied total on the week. It's amazing how bad they've managed to be. Some injury news here. Bruce Ellington, I think he's currently questionable but fairly unlikely to play with the hamstring. He has been chewing up a lot of targets for them. I mean, Kenny Galladay only got targeted four times against Arizona, so it's not clear that...
I'm not going crazy in that target share even if Ellington's out. This team is...
You just don't care.
Okay. You can't trust it. I just can't trust the offense. They're just bad. They can't run the ball.
They're extremely bad.
All their best... They traded Tate away. Kerryon Johnson, their best running back, is out. Like, they just... This is, if you have this many implied points to the Buffalo Bills on a given week, like, yeah, you are just actively one of the worst teams in football. There's no doubt about it to me.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, let's move into the 4 o'clock games. Only a couple of these. Seattle goes in and plays San Francisco. They're 3.5-point road favorites with a 44 over under. Injury news we're waiting to hear on Doug Baldwin. It looks like he might play. It's unclear, you know, where at times where he hasn't played, that they haven't gone robust target share. They're content to try to run the ball as much as possible with a running game that is sometimes hard to target, simply because you can't trust what their overall plan was. Like, for instance, last week they ran Chris Carson 22 times, but Rashad Penny was also in there for 8 carries. Mike Davis got a couple carries. You know, Carson had 35 snaps to Penny's 14 to Davis's 18, but this is 3 running backs that are getting 15 or so snaps a game. I don't know if that's something I really want to trust. Is there something you see on Seattle that I'm not?
I don't think I've played any Seattle guys all season. I think I played Mike Davis in a GPP.
I by mistake played the wrong D Moore. Right. On the week we were supposed to play DJ Moore, and I played David Moore. That was my one mistake.
And you got there hardcore. No, I'm not interested in Seattle. I think San Francisco, the more interesting side of the matchup here. The big news right now, obviously, is Matt Breida. Currently, it looks like he's on track to play. He might be limited. Yeah, obviously, if he plays, I don't think you want to run either him or Jeffrey Wilson. Wilson showed plenty of competence out of the backfield last week. They gave him the ball a ton. I think either of those guys in the low sixes, high fives, like, you'd be deciding between them and Dalvin Cook or something, right? And I think that would be a pretty straightforward nod in Cook's favor, at least as far as our system's concerned, right?
Yeah, the only guy really interested here is Kittle. Kittle's been about as good a tight end play as you can be on a week-to-week basis.
It's expensive off. Now, man. He's 1,000 more than Ebron.
The target share is as good as you can get over the last 4 weeks. Like, yeah. And that is directly translated to when Nick Mullins took over as quarterback, by the way. Yeah. So if you're looking at you know, who the primary pass catcher in this offense is when Mullins is on our center, it is by far it's Kittle. It's really not particularly close. I guess in terms of ranking them based on price, Kittle on DraftKings is 63, Ebron 59, Cooks 56, and we're going to get to Gronk in 1 second here. But, you know, do you have a – let's just call these guys basically all the same price. Like, you know, maybe we're making a decision on, like, defense or something like that. Do you have a conviction play of that group, the Kittle, Ebron, Cook, Gronk, or maybe want to tier them? Like, there's a couple guys you would put in one tier as opposed to the other.
I think I'd like Kittle and Ebron for starters. I think Cook and Gronk, I'm going to ask for a little bit more in terms of sample size before I get too excited. I know people are all about, maybe we'll move into the Pittsburgh-New England game here in a second, but people are all about the Gronk resurgence narrative after a really good game against Miami, where he was targeted 8 times, caught all 8 of those balls for 107 yards and a touchdown.
They targeted him on the final play, too, when he fell on his face and trying to beat Kenny Drake.
Fair enough. The Miami targeted him, too. You should give him 9 targets, yeah. But I think that could be a nice sign that Gronk is, like, really firing now and, you know, fully healthy, getting it done out there. I think I'd be pretty hesitant to pay for the speculation on Gronk's upside when, like, Ebron is basically a Gronk light right now anyway, and Kittle just had what would have been the best game of Gronk's career. So I just don't know. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Kittle and Ebron in the top tier, and then probably Gronk, and I don't think I'm going to play Jared Cook.
Final game is Gronk and the Patriots taking on the Steelers. 3-point road favorites with easily the highest over-under of the entire slate at 52. Okay, so let's start on the Pittsburgh side, because the relevant news here is that James Conner has still not practiced this week with a high ankle sprain, and then you get the news that the absolute last thing you want to hear when trying to project something is James Conner hasn't practiced and doesn't need the practice to play. So let's say we're sitting here at 12 o'clock, 12:30 on Sunday, and we're looking at this game, and we're thinking, we don't know James Conner's status. Because then the reason I say it is because, not that I'd really want to run Connor out there, but Jalen Samuel was pretty damn effective last week.
I would love to play Jalen Samuels again, sure.
But are we going to... Because here's the other problem, too. When we're talking about DraftKings and FanDuel that both have late swap, that's all fine and good. There's 2 4 o'clock games. There's no one to swap to. Like, there's going to be no relevant swaps that you can swap out. I mean, that you were going to feel anything close to safe with if we get the word that Connor's playing. Because not only if you have Samuel in your lineup, not only will you will not be able to swap Connor in because he's too expensive. At that point, you're staring at, you know, basically a cheap wide receiver from this game.
You know, Dante Pettis, dude.
Exactly. So this is like or one of these, like, Seattle losers, like one of these Seahawks losers. Like, I just don't know. Yeah. Like, what are we going to do? If it's 12:30 on Sunday, are we just going to... Because, again, like, Jalen Samuel is, like, one of the best values in the slate. 5,500 on FanDuel. I think he's, like, right at 5,000. You have 5,200 on DraftKings from a guy that we just saw come in, get a majority of the snaps.
Caught seven balls. He was pretty ineffective in the running game, but
outsnapped Ridley 48-8. So there was no timeshare at all. Now Ridley did snipe one of those touchdowns, which sucks. Seven targets in the pass game in a game that, hey, they could be playing from behind. Pittsburgh's done that a lot this year. What are we gonna do here? Are we just gonna be in an impossible situation Sunday?
Yeah, it sounds like it. I think you probably just don't do it. I think if we
it's
hear
gonna be brutal.
I think if you hear no news on Connor, Samuels is enough of a question mark. Like he wasn't like if Samuels was great last week, if he had like 14 carries and turned those into like 60 yards, I would feel a lot more concerned than I would dodging him when he had 11 carries for 28 yards. I think that's enough of a tiebreaker or whatever that I could just probably not do it. But I think it's. Yeah, just as soon have the news. It seems like probably in Pittsburgh they're going to have made their mind up by noon, right? So can they just let everyone know?
I think they're just doing it like the gamesmanship piece. I think they probably...
They hate the Pats.
And they just know. I think they know. I think they, and I'm not saying they know that he's not going to play. I think they just know. Actually, I take that back. I think if they knew he was going to play, he would be practicing. So I don't think you would just let
That's him what I was going to say. Yeah. I think my guess is they know he's not going to play, but don't just want to come out and say it.
Yeah, so and we're going to be... look, I think this is a little bit less of a problem on FanDuel because you get a guy like Dalvin Cook for just 700 more, which is not nothing, but I don't know. They're like in the same price store. I think I'd maybe just... on balance, find Cook to be safer than Jalen Samuels. Just even
if you had both news on both, sure.
Right? So I think I'd be fine there, and you're getting like a slight discount on Mixon. So I think on FanDuel you're okay. On DraftKings, it's going to be a little tougher. That price is a pretty nice one on DraftKings to sort of fits a need where you're usually looking for guys like in this 5,000 range to round out a lineup.
Because what our system does right now is like. Oh, you don't want Jalen Samuels? Why don't you just play Jeffrey Wilson in his timeshare?
Yeah, which know? I've already downgraded his exactly. thing. Like then he goes down to Adrian Peterson. I don't think you saw me throw my hands up in the air as you were talking because I started looking down the list of like where we're going to go outside of Samuel, and yeah. I kind of threw my hands up in frustration because I thought, oh, this is where we're going to land. Is I suspect without him, we're going to land on something like Zeke, Mixon, and Cook still on DraftKings and just punting.
Yeah, so maybe receiver. you make the case for it in that realm. I don't know. I haven't looked at the contingency plans. Quite yet in terms of what's going on DraftKings, but you know maybe if you can get like Jeffrey Wilson, if you have Breed and News, wouldn't be obviously the worst pivot there. You know maybe if Breed, I can't see Breed's price at the moment, but if Breed were to play, maybe you could pivot there. I don't know. Maybe there's some reasonable option. Maybe if you figure on DraftKings that the upside's high enough, especially because you'd love to see him being used in the passing game. Those 7 free points that you got from passing to Samuels last week really mattered. So. I don't know. It is a tough spot, though.
New England side will finish it off here. They
Juju, good play, too, just before you move to New England.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Juju's actually pretty close. He's actually, yeah, he's we have player. Him right around the same target share as Antonio Brown at this point, maybe just a tick lower, but his conversion rate's slightly better. Final thoughts here on the New England side. We saw Gronk resurgence game last week, but he was still actually the third most targeted guy in the offense. Yeah. Edelman and Gordon both. No, wait, is it Edelman and Gordon? Shoot, I just had him in front of me. I know he was third overall. I'll get there real quick. Yeah, sorry. Edelman had 12 targets. Gordon had 9, and then Gronk had 8. All three were pretty good. Gordon, not as much from an efficiency standpoint, still got there on yards at 96. Thoughts on this passing game? Seems like this could be a time to, again, exploit a Pittsburgh defense that has shown the willingness to just be bad in terms of how they're going to match up with other teams. Like we saw Keenan Allen just destroy them. We saw the Raiders hang. Like where do we
land? Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of like Edelman from that perspective. If Pittsburgh hasn't learned their lessons and they want to, and because you also just have to respect Gordon and Gronk too. Like you can't just play off those guys. And if you had trouble allocating the resources to deal with the Chargers' best receiver in Keenan Allen, I could see a scenario where you have trouble allocating resources for Edelman, who's arguably the third best receiver on this team. So, I think Edelman definitely an interesting tournament play. Potential there for cash as well. I'm not too interested in the New England running game. It kind of seems like a poor man's version of the Saints or something with Michelle and White. I don't have any interest in that. But, yeah, in the passing game, I feel like for cash, you might be exposing yourself to a situation where the Pats have shown, you know, that they have no loyalties to any given guy. Like, they just will play what works. And if you happen to guess wrong, then you're kind of up a creek. But I do think Edelman has enough safety built in there that I'd be willing to play.
Hilarious, the snap count on the New England running backs last week. 3 guys had 30 or more. That was Michelle, 34, White, 33, James Devlin at 36, and then Rex Burkhead still got his 17 in. So they're just all over the place with these running backs. Yeah. Obviously, the only two you can really trust from a fantasy perspective, and I put that in quotes, is Michelle and James White. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR. DFSR.com/deals will get you started. Go on over to the site, jump into the premium chat, ask people how they're liking the system and the product. They will tell you their honest opinion, and we're fine with that because we think you'll hear it and then be with us for the long haul. Also, go check out our Twitch stream. It's going to be going up Sunday morning, where we'll be breaking down our thoughts leading into week 15 lineup lock. DFSR.com/deals will get you started. Buddy, enjoy your week 15 in the NFL.
Thanks, man.